The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
Voters went to the polls in Georgia, Mississippi, and Washington. Hawaii held its caucus late last night. The results pushed both candidates past the number of delegates needed for their nominations. In a post to the social media platform X, Biden celebrated his status as his party's presumptive nominee, calling it a time of choosing in a new campaign video. Trump's campaign posted a video of the former president calling the milestone a great day of victory. Neither candidate had any serious challengers remaining, and both have already started campaigning for the general election. And Trump is now the first Republican in history to secure the presidential nomination three consecutive times. The nominations become official at each party's conventions this summer.
It's the Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, well, good afternoon and welcome. It's great to be back here with you today. Thank you. You've got it, right? We knew this was happening. Seems like we got a rematch at 2020 coming our way again. Are you ready for it? I don't know. Like the polls all indicate nobody likes either candidate, right? No one likes either candidate, and yet this is what we have. Yesterday's primaries, we had primaries in Georgia and in Hawaii and in Mississippi and in Washington State to put both candidates over the line in terms of delegates, so it's now official. So for the rest of the primaries, it's just going to we'll see how much they can pile up before the convention this summer, but it's the first time a rematch has happened since 1956. A little bit of history for you. When Dwight Eisenhower, he went against Stevenson again, and he trounced Stevenson by, I think it was 15 points in the votes, just about swept him in the Electoral College. But this will also turn out, I think, to be one of the longest presidential campaigns in U.S. history. And we've got a little more than 7.5 months of this to go until November 5th. So strap on your seatbelts. We'll talk about it coming up a little bit later today, too. I don't know if you heard the State of the Union address by the president. Boy, there was some stuff there as a Catholic that really has me concerned. And what we're going to see here in this race is really a battle of ideologies. It's going to be two different mindsets. One that looks at so-called reproductive justice or abortion, looks at big government. You've got another one that has a very different view on the border and a lot of these other issues. So I don't know where you stand on it all, but we'll break it down. We'll look at the moral components of both candidates. You know, when we talk about this type of stuff, I hear people say, oh my gosh, Trump is a rapist. He's this, he's that. You know, you either love your candidate or you hate him. And it seems there's no in between here, which is really quite unfortunate. Hey, today is the 11th anniversary of Pope Francis and his election as Pope. It came after the surprise resignation of Pope Benedict XVI. I don't know where you were. You know, a lot of people say they remember when Kennedy was shot. I was too young. I remember exactly where I was when my phone rang. And my producer says, you're not going to believe this. Pope Benedict XVI has resigned. He has resigned. That was 11 years ago. That was 11 years ago. Do you remember when Pope Francis was, when that was first announced? As I said, I don't know where you were. ABC News was part of the broadcast when it was first being reported. I'll bring you back in time. Here's a snapshot of what unfolded.
7:06 p.m. Rome time, white smoke. And as that smoke rose and billowed into the night air, St. Peter's Square erupted. It was a moment of pure joy for them, of profound prayer, of the chance to witness history. Soon the square was packed with more than 100,000 rain-soaked people, their eyes turned upward in anticipation to the red-draped windows of the Loggia of St. Peter's, everyone waiting to see the new Pope. The Vatican band marched into cheers, followed by the Swiss Guards, the Pope's personal troop. And then French Cardinal Thuron stepped out to pronounce the ancient words.
Habemus Papam.
We have a Pope, but who?
Sancte Romani Ecclesiae Cardinalem Bergoglio.
Jorge Mario Bergoglio of Argentina waited in the wings, Vatican TV capturing the moments before he greeted the world under his new name. Pope Francis, the first of that name. a Latin American, where 40% of the world's Catholics now live. And back home in Argentina, ecstatic news broadcasts,
para mí, emocionante,
proclaimed the history in this moment, El Papa es Argentino.
There's so much new about this. It's a Latin American for the first time. It's a Jesuit for the first time. He's taken the name of Saint Francis for the first time, which is clearly a signal that he wants to show a different face of the church, face of the poor.
He spoke softly, simply in Italian, addressing the crowd and the world as brothers and sisters. His first act as Pope
Padre nostro,
was to pray the Lord's Prayer, the Hail Mary, the Gloria.
Venga il tuo regno, ma liberaci dal male.
Such a beautiful act. What a beautiful prayer to pray. As you heard in that piece, he was the first Latin American and Jesuit priest to serve as Pope, took the name Francis in honor of St. Francis of Assisi, and his pontificate kind of has reflected that as well. His commitment is to build a church that is of the poor and for the poor. And I think a lot of that comes from, you know, the way he lived his life down in Argentina. He wrote apostolic exhortations. The joy of the gospel was, you know, one of the first that came out there. There's a lot of controversy over Laudato Si. You might remember that. Wrote that in 2015, and that was his landmark encyclical. And, you know, with this whole discussion of climate change, some people either loved it or they hated it. So, but he's a pope, too, that just one little aspect that I think goes unsung regarding Pope Francis. I know people are divided sometimes on our Holy Father. I pray for him. I'm grateful for him. This is a suffering pope, and I think he'll be remembered for a lot of things. But he is a man who has a lot of health challenges and a lot of adversities. You know, when he was, before he became pope, when he was Jorge Bergoglio, he had part of his lung removed. So he doesn't have, you know, that full capacity. He had a severe respiratory infection in his early 20s. And despite that surgery, you know, he's been operating, even with COVID. I was very worried about what might happen to him. You know, he's operating on, you know, half that capacity. You know, since his election, he's experienced all sorts of health issues, as you know. He's had to cancel public meetings. He's had to hand off his speeches a few times. He struggled with sciatica, a nerve condition that causes pain in your leg, making walking incredibly difficult, standing difficult, even sitting at times, very painful. This man is in a lot of pain. And, you know, my heart goes out to him, but I think all of these popes, I saw this with John Paul II, there's a certain suffering either they willingly take on or that God allows them to embrace as they carry the cross for the church. Pope Francis has been hospitalized for other concerns. He underwent surgery, remember, what was it, about 2 years ago now? And I think he had diverticulitis or something. I don't recall exactly what it was, but surgery was successful. He made a recovery. But pray for him. I would ask you to please remember him in your prayers. How long his pontificate will be, I don't know. He said something very interesting about how long he would be pope. Some thought, you know, it would be a short one. He emphasized this notion that his pontificate would not be long. And whether, does that mean God's going to call him? Does that mean he's going to resign? There was that precedent established by Benedict XVI 11 years ago, you know, when he became the first pope to resign in nearly 600 years. Pope Francis has hinted at the idea that he sees his role as the Bishop of Rome as a service with a potentially limited time frame. He actually said, you know, he made a remark one time. He said Benedict XVI's, kind of hinted, how am I going to say this? Hinted of on the relatively short duration of how of Pope Benedict XVI. And they said his decision to resign due to advanced age and declining health was courageous. And it perhaps opened the door for future popes to consider resignation as a viable option. They no longer feel capable of the demands of the papacy. So we'll see what happens. Pray for him. Don't know whether he'll resign, whether God will call him home. He does have the weight of the church on his shoulders. But happy anniversary, Holy Father. 11 years. 11 years. I want to talk a little bit about what's happening here at home, too. We talked about the president. We need to pray for our country, of course, and for all of our world leaders. I was watching the news last night. I don't know what media outlets you watch. I try to watch international outlets as well as, you know, different outlets here in the States, both liberal and conservative. It's really strange, the mindset of people. I don't know if you've been following the former special counsel, Robert Hur. He gave testimony before the House Judiciary Committee. And a lot of the Dems right now are saying, hey, this is great. You exonerated President Biden. Attorney General Merrick Garland appointed her. He's, by the way, a former Trump appointee to investigate Biden. And, of course, we know that both presidents had classified material. President Biden had him in his garage, his house at the University of Delaware, a lot of other places, even let his ghostwriter, who did not have, you know, the clearance to see this stuff, see them without proper scrutiny. I mean, gosh, who knows what could have gotten out. So her was grilled by both sides. Democrats on the committee were claiming that they exonerated Biden. Her maintained that he only declared that a jury would not find him guilty because of his poor memory. NBC News will tell you more about what went down. He was being blasted, as I said, by both sides. Check this out.
Former special counsel Robert Hur was grilled on Capitol Hill.
We identified evidence that the president willfully retained classified materials after the end of his vice presidency. We did not, however, identify evidence that rose to the level of proof beyond a reasonable doubt.
Hur also defended his assessment that the president would present himself to a jury as an elderly man with a poor memory.
My assessment in the report about the relevance of the president's memory was necessary and accurate and fair.
But Republicans slammed his decision not to prosecute.
Joe Biden broke the law. But because he's a forgetful old man who would appear sympathetic to a jury, Mr. Hur chose not to bring charges.
Democrats blasted him, too, for even mentioning the president's memory.
You understood when you made that decision, didn't you, Mr. Hur, that you would ignite a political firestorm with that language, didn't you?
Congressman, politics played no part whatsoever in my investigative steps.
Hur pushed back, though, when Democrats claimed his report exonerated President Biden.
You exonerated him. Know that the term willful retention has a... Mr. Hur, it's my time.
The White House insists the report does clear the president.
The conclusion was simple, that there is no case here. The case is closed.
I mean, the reality is the case is closed. The president, he will not face charges for it. But Hur was really clear. He wanted to make sure that they understood that, no, this is not an exoneration. You know, they say that the president, when he was doing interviews, I mean, his mind kind of wandered. He made car noises. Jonathan Hurley was a very gifted attorney as well, was commenting on this the other day. And he made note of the fact that the infractions of Joe Biden in terms of the classified material and how they were maintained and kept were far more grievous than those of even President Trump. So they're not sure how they're going to go after Trump on this if they give Biden a pass. People have questions, though, about the president's mental state. And when you've got somebody coming out and saying, no, I did not exonerate, when you have, you know, former special counsel Robert Hur say, I didn't exonerate. I think he was trying to, I think the guy was sitting on a double-edged sword here. I mean, one, I think he was trying to, in some respects, not throw the president under the bus, but at the same time, he had to do his job. And no matter what side of the aisle you're on, you're not happy with them. But I think the decision was pretty clear. We'll see what happens. You know, this is something that does not reverse itself. And in the next 10 months, as we get closer to elections, keep your eye on the current president and see how well he performs. President Trump, he's got his own battles. He's got how many indictments? 91, 92 indictments against him. So he's going to be in and out of courtrooms. It's going to be a mess. Really is going to be a mess. There was a vote also. We've been talking a lot about TikTok. A vote of 352-65. The House today passed a bill that would require Americans' version of TikTok to divest from the Chinese owner, ByteDance. And that came even after TikTok. Did you hear what they did? They got 170 million users to call their congressional representatives to condemn the move. They went on there and they said that teenage girls who didn't even know what a congressman was were calling up, don't take my TikTok away from me. Listen to this. This report comes from The Hill. I don't know if your kids are on TikTok. You might be concerned about what they're seeing. I think you should be. The Hill will tell you a little bit more about the bipartisan effort to ban the app here in the U.S. I don't know how you fare on this, whether or not you support it, but here's some insight.
ByteDance's TikTok has become a Gen Z behemoth, but it's raised national security concerns about how the CCP is operating the data and the programming of the app. Remember that Osama bin Laden letter that went viral on ByteDance's TikTok platform the other month? That just happened to be at the exact same time that General Secretary Xi was in the United States meeting with President Biden. I mean, imagine if MTV was owned by Vladimir Putin in the 1980s. The legislation would ban TikTok if ByteDance doesn't divest and pull out its financial holdings within 6 months of the legislation being enacted. This has advanced 50-0 out of the committee, but now former President Donald Trump, who originally backed the ban, is suggesting that he doesn't necessarily want TikTok banned, and Biden has been equally as ambiguous. He banned TikTok from government phones, but at the same time, just the other week, he launched a account for his reelection on the platform. So dozens of countries around the world have banned ByteDance's TikTok. Is the United States next?
I certainly hope it will be. I know the president said that he would sign the bill. It's now got to go through the Senate. And from the reports we're hearing, neither side is in a hurry to get the legislation passed. Republican Senator John Cornyn told NBC, he says, we do things slowly over here and it takes time. Maggie, you were telling me about, who was it? Was it Congressman Crenshaw? Who was the person that you were saying made a statement on the House floor? Your mic isn't on. All right, I'll let that go because apparently her mic is not fired up, so we'll leave it at that. We'll see what happens with TikTok. You know, I know that President Biden, look, I've got great concerns. I listened to Representative from Wisconsin, Mike Gallagher, who has very eloquently and very vociferously warned about the dangers of TikTok. It's a spy app. We've talked about it and what it also does just to your kids. But it's a powerful mechanism to reach a big voting bloc. And that's exactly what, I think the Biden administration plans on doing. They're going to use TikTok, so big media buys, to help promote their campaign. So don't know where Trump is on that. As I heard in the piece, he was changing his position. I'm not quite sure why. I think if it's a danger to national security or to our kids, I think we ban that. And I hope the president will ultimately sign the bill. Hey, there's one other bill let me tell you about quickly, and I'll take a break here. We just changed our clocks again. There's a bill in California that would eliminate the time change altogether. So this will have ramifications in a lot of other states. They're going to join the, with Arizona, and they're going to keep the state on standard time. There are bills right now in Washington and Oregon that would do the same thing. And there are also quite a few people, in the that sunny city there who want daylight saving time, but also reported that if the state keeps the standard time, they won't need federal approval, but they'll need to move to daylight saving time. So I don't know if daylight saving time has affected you at all. I don't know where you stand. I kind of like the daylight, but every sleep expert I've spoken to says standard time is best for your health. Let me take a quick break here. And when we come back, we'll change gears. Got a lot to get into today, so stay with me.
Your news. The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio. Your news now. We go there. The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
Coming up in a few minutes, we'll take a look at where we go from here. Some things you should look at in what will be the longest presidential election in your lifetime. That's coming up. But right now, I saw something that I just want to run by you here. I think it's a interesting story. I don't know, when you were in school, did you ever have these Scholastic book fairs where this Scholastic book company would, bring all kinds of books to to your school, I don't know, the gymnasium or the library or wherever it was, and teachers and parents could look at them and they could buy whatever they want. And the books were pretty good. They were fairy tales, books that were appropriate for kids on anatomy and other science topics and things like that. Do you remember that? Well, that was then. Today, you know what we've been talking about. I've been told by reliable sources what's being put out by Scholastic Book Fairs. What's the word? I guess I'm going to use the word disappointing. I'm going to be gentle with it, right? I was told they're putting out filth and trash, to be honest with you. It's all designed to go along with the woke environment that a lot of our public education is now trying to indoctrinate your kid with. And unfortunately, there are Catholic schools that are starting to bring this stuff in too. And that's even more tragic. So I just learned about something that's an antidote to this. I think it was Ignatius Press and Ave Maria University. They teamed up and they're going to be bringing good Catholic books, not just good books, period, but they're going to bring these to Catholic schools in a book fair type setting. And maybe you got kids at school, maybe you got grandkids at school. I want to put this on your radar so you can support them, because I think if there's a demand for this type of stuff, these types of books get printed and your kids can at least be exposed to this stuff rather than the poison that's now creeping into our schools. I'm joined right now by Mark Middendorf. He's the president of Ave Maria University. And Mark, thank you for your time. It's great to have you with us. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Drew. It's a pleasure to be on. And just thanks for what you do and the show and standing in the breach on so many of these different topics.
Well, thank you for saying that. That's kind. I do appreciate it very much. And thank you for what you guys do, forming incredible students for the future. That's what we need. You know more than anybody the intellectual and the ideological battle that takes place in our educational systems. Yeah, and it used to be just at the higher levels of academia. Now we see it even within our grade schools, which is just so traffic. Without getting too graphic, How bad are these Scholastic book fairs? And then also fill me in, what was it that made Ave Maria say, look, we want to do something to make a difference?
Well, those are two great questions. I'll give your listeners, because seeing is believing, a simple, if they just go out to the web, type in Scholastic Pride Resource Guide, they will see firsthand the 117 different books they've got that they came out with that are LGBTQ.
Wow.
They've sold, I think, 3.2 million books. And I'll just give you this is their literature. So this isn't our pitch on their literature. This is their literature. And it really just shows they're proud of this. They have a book series collection called Heartstopper. And it's for 12-year-olds and up. And it says, this series follows the story of a gay couple, Nick and Charlie, as they go through high school and young adult life. And the book is very graphic. The series is very graphic, I'll just say. And they have books that go down to 2-year-olds, 3-year-olds, 4-year-olds. And it's very intentional. So as what you're doing in so many of your shows, we're trying to stand in the breach. We're trying to give an alternative to these mainstream publishers like Scholastic, and Scholastic, I think, is a $1.7 billion entity. I think they've got something like 95% market share in the Catholic schools. And as we've met with different bishops and different pastors, they are so happy what we're doing, because even if they take these bad books out and they don't put those into the book fair, they're still supporting the very organization. Wow. That's producing them for other types of venues, right? Because the Scholastic has book fairs all over, you know, public schools and things like that. So we're really just trying to give an alternative that aligns our Catholic values from kindergarten through eighth grade that will really edify our children's minds, shape their character, and deepen their faith.
So I'm sorry. I didn't mean to step on you. No, what kind of books are you going to present? I mean, what are we looking at? And, who's on the board of coming up with that content?
Right. So the partnership with Ignatius Press is just a straight up equal partnership. That's great. And we take our students across six majors, accounting, business administration, communications, computer science, finance, and marketing. And we, our students work on these, the different elements of the fair. So they, we stood up this whole entity in about 4 months. We have about 600 titles in it. All, every one of those titles is fully vetted. They're from Ignatius Press. They're from Ignatius Press has a partnership on children's books with Magnificat.
Oh, great.
Obviously, when I was at Augustine Institute, they have tons of children's books with Paul McCusker, and they're just incredible. So, and there's lots of other publishers as well that are Orthodox Catholic publishers that have great books, and it's even books on science or history or geography. So it's really a broad range of books that have all been fully vetted, and we have about 600 titles in total. And we stood it up. We launched our first book fair within about 4 months. We're full basically for our spring book fairs, and we're now building the list for this coming fall's book fairs. And it's really just nothing short. And we consecrated the whole thing to our Blessed Mother. We signed the partnership on September 8th on her birthday, and God has just blessed, and it's been terrific for our students too, because they get real world experience doing something good for the church while they're gaining experience on how businesses run.
Well, first of all, thank you for doing it. Ignatius has got phenomenal content. So what a wonderful partnership that is for you. Do you think you'll be able to compete with Scholastica? I mean, you know, the bigger picture, I'm always looking down the road and around the bend. I'm thinking you had to start somewhere, right? Could this potentially, could the introduction of these book fairs that you're now presenting, could they influence the content of future children's literature being published and make it into public schools and other venues like that?
Yeah, we actually have one of our trustees, and one of our other trustees, by the way, Dave Duran, who's one of your speaks on Relevant Radio. And by the way, just on a partnership wise, we are so blessed by Father Rocky. We have a partnership with Relevant Radio. He comes down here and does the Rosary Across America. And it's just been such a blessing to work with Relevant Radio and the amazing apostolate it is. But as far as we stood up, we're in the process right now of standing up a publisher that's led by students, run by students, supports them, where we have illustrators, writers that are creating new books that kind of go head-to-head with some of these other topics.
That's great.
That Scholastic is coming out with on the LGBTQ side. So in addition, there are just so many great publishers out there too that have great books. So, you know, we're just really partnering with lots of other Catholic publishers as well.
Well, Mark, thanks.
I'd just like to say one thing, Father Fessio, who's obviously with Ignatius Press and really was one of the co-creators of this whole concept, they've just done an amazing job. For the first 4 months, I think Father was working 12 hours a day on this thing, pouring himself into it. And so that's kind of, you know, but that's the partnership we have. And Father now even teaches a class down here in the
I love it. We're stronger together. I love all these different partnerships. Yep. We're really grateful for Ave Maria and all that you do down there. Dr. Mark Miravalli is a good friend of this program as well. And we just know the lives that you're touching down there. We need, I say it all the time on the air, well-formed hearts and minds, people that are well-formed to become our future politicians, our legislators, our you know, our writers, our doctors, our educators. So you're making a big, big difference, and we're grateful for what you do. If people want to learn more about this endeavor, or if they want to support the cause or contribute with writing, what's the best way to get more information?
Right. Two ways. One, just simply go to IgnatiusBookFairs.com. That they can sign up if they want to volunteer and launch a book fair at their parish or their school. They can do that. And then if they're ever interested in coming to the university, if they know juniors or seniors in high school, we would love for them to come for what we call an Ave experience. And you just go to AveMaria.edu. And
awesome stuff.
You know, they can come down here and visit, and we would love to host your listeners.
Well, keep up your good work, and let's talk again soon. Thanks for all you do.
Thank you, Drew.
You got it. It's Mark Middendorf. privileged to have him with us. He is the president of Ave Maria University. Check out Ave Maria University. Great institution. It is. Trust me, good Catholic organization out there. If you want a well-formed child, then do them and yourself a real service. Check them out. It's about 15 minutes before the top of the hour. We need to take a short pause. I'll be back with more right after this.
Connecting you to the truths of your Catholic faith. The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
President Biden and former President Trump officially clinched their party's nominations with primary victories in multiple states, setting up a high-stakes rematch in what's expected to be a bitter, costly, and lengthy general election campaign battle.
We're the official nominee of the Republican Party, which is a big deal.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, it's on. Makes for the first rematch election since 1956. Also sets up the possibility of a president getting reelected for a non-consecutive term for the first time since Grover Cleveland at the end of the 19th century. So strap on your seatbelts. We are going to have the longest presidential campaign in history, and at least in the history of our country. More than 7.5 months worth of ads trying to tell you the other guy's bad. Right? I'm already tuning it out. I can't stand it. There's also some wild card issues floating around. It could change things up. Robert F. Kennedy Jr., he's still running for the office, and there are rumors he may join up with the Libertarian Party in order to get on the ballot. There was also talk of Aaron Rodgers, you know, the Green Bay quarterback, perhaps, you know, being his running mate. That's not going to happen. Anyway, there was a recent poll that shows Kennedy taking about 15% of the vote away from Biden. So I'm sure the Biden administration is not happy about him still being in the race. One final wild card, and we'll talk to Logan Church about it. Joe Biden's health. No secret, he's getting older and showing. The former prosecutor, special prosecutor, I really should say, Robert Hur, didn't file any charges against him over his unlawful storage of those classified documents. Why? He said he knew a jury would find him to be an old man with memory problems. You know, a lot of people said, oh, you exonerated him. No, I never exonerated him. I just think a jury would find him to be an old man with memory problems. So this is what the transcript shows. So the other wild card of all the trials, Trump is going to face 92 felony charges, though that got reduced by six today after the Georgia judge dropped a couple of them. I think it dropped six of them. So how's it all going to shake out? Let's talk about it. What should you look for in the weeks and months ahead? Logan Church joins us today, political director for Catholic Vote. You can find them at catholicvote.org. Logan, thanks for joining us today, and thanks for your patience.
Yeah, of course. Thanks for having me back on.
Boy, lots to talk about, right? I mean, there's so much going on. Let's get maybe some disclosures out of the way. I mean, Catholic Vote has endorsed Donald Trump. You've advocated for his position. I can understand that, especially in light of President Biden's very adamant and vocal and scandalous pro-death position. I don't think that means that your organization doesn't see, you know, the obvious flaws in Donald Trump either. So how do you see these two candidates? You know, one is we're questioning both age and mental acuity. The other one's facing indictments. A lot of people don't like that president at all. What do you expect in the next 7 months? How do you see it playing out?
Well, first, I would say this. As Catholics, we do not have a moral obligation to vote for Donald Trump, but we definitely have a moral obligation not to vote for Joe Biden. Right. Joe Biden has made it super clear for those of you who watched the State of the Union or watched the recaps. I was one of the sorry people who sat through the whole thing. Wow. He made it very clear what his priorities were, not just touting abortion, but also touting late-term abortion, yeah. You know, claiming Katie Cox as a hero for murdering her fully formed child in her womb. You know, I mean, like, he is not even hiding his opinions anymore. And I know we all know that. So the question becomes, what's the alternative? Well, I think at Catholic Vote, we often can be pragmatic when it comes to views of politics and understanding that the fastest way to change culture is through the political realm. And so I know often, like in 2016, I think everybody kept saying, you have to choose between the lesser of two evils, right? That was kind of the thing everyone said about Hillary versus Trump. Right. And at the end of the day, you know, President Trump has had a very strong stance on protecting Catholics, protecting life. And I know that there's some concerns with his more recent platform change on that. But at the end of the day, it's better than Joe Biden's. And you look at people like RFK, and he's also equally as pro-choice. When that comes into play, it's like the only candidate that even remotely and just close to our platform and has a good shot at winning is President Trump.
I think you bring really, you've synthesized everything perfectly in this respect. There's one issue that every Catholic who's listening right now, and I think every citizen of goodwill in this country, should have at the top of their pyramid. And that's this issue of life. As Catholics, we know that in our nation's bishop have called it the preeminent issue, because it touches on that foundational principle, the inherent dignity of the human being and of human life. This is something that, a lot of people are willing to overlook. How do you see this issue of life playing out? Do you think people understand, I don't know, the hierarchy of issues that they should look at? And of course, if you have two pro-death candidates, then, the calculus there changes. But these two candidates seems pretty clear where they stand on these particular issues. What has our nation's bishops been saying, and how do you want to address that issue of life?
Yeah, I think the pro-life movement needs to be invigorated now more than ever. We've had so much of the same messaging for the past 50 years. And it's so interesting because for so long, pro-lifers, all we could only think about two things: prayers, which was great, and judicials. And those were our two focuses in the pro-life movement for 50 years.
Yeah.
Now, fast forward, all of a sudden it's on the state level. We're battling out. And I feel like a lot of states feel ill-equipped and they feel like they're not ready. And it's because we haven't sharpened our messaging around the pro-life movement. When you're messaging to people who have had the media and Hollywood and the culture defining the way they're viewing this as a choice, I put in air quotes, I think it's important that we look towards candidates that say, okay, well, to the middle ground voters, the part of America, the majority of American voters that don't necessarily fall in either party, who like to say they're pro-choice, whatever that means to them, because it means something different to everybody. If somebody's really pro-choice, then why isn't the government funding pro-life options just as much as they're funding pro-abortion options? When you see that there's so much funding that goes to Planned Parenthood and so much funding that goes to these pro-death entities, yet there's little to no funding that goes to the pregnancy care resource centers, the places that help these mothers who decide, hey, I don't want to have an abortion. I feel like it may be my only choice because that's what I'm being fed, but I want to choose life. And I think you're going to see movements in that direction with the Republican Party, especially with Donald Trump's campaign, to say, let's redirect some of this funding to real choices for women, not just shove abortion down their throats.
Yeah, I think it's another great point. We really need to stress that and let people know that there are alternatives. To have a Catholic president, and I'm going to talk about it later in my broadcast here, say that if Roe v. Wade, if he had the opportunity, if he came across the desk, he'd make it the law of the land, to advocate for this type of stuff is just insane. Donald Trump, let's talk about him and all the legal challenges that he faces. Is it likely that he won't run? Who will his running mate ultimately be? Any ideas on that? And who would Catholic vote like to see perhaps as a VP?
Yeah. So, oh gosh, all good questions. First, I will say with the legal battles, it's so hard to say at this point because it's starting to feel a little bit like the boy that cried wolf, because it's been nonstop just attacks on Donald Trump for so many years now. I think your average American's kind of like, okay, we get it. You don't like him. Like, we got it. You made it super clear. And it's been one impeachment trial after another. Now they're trying to, the indictments and all this other stuff. It's hard to even like sift through what's baloney and what's truth. And so I think we're just gonna have to wait and see. I know he has some important dates coming up in April, so it'll be interesting to see what happens there. Past that, with the VP pick, he's thrown around some names. Some of them we like more than others. Catholic Vote, there's a couple people on that list, a couple people that we know have been whispered behind closed doors. Catholic Vote would love to see one of our supporters, a strong Catholic candidate as a vice president pick. Because I think that Trump recognizes, and he's expressed this heavily, that he needs Catholic support to get into office. I mean, let's be honest. And also, like you said, going up against a currently Catholic president. It would be great to have a representation of a true Catholic by his side.
No, that's so true. I only have a moment or two. The numbers are 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. I'll go to the calls in just a second, but I just wanted to get to one more point here before things get too far away from us right now. Right now, we also have conflicts in the Ukraine and with Israel. We know where President Biden is on that. Where's Trump on those? How do you see that playing in this race too? Because we saw how many people voted uncommitted both in Minnesota and in Michigan, kind of as a message to President Biden in his reelection. How do you see the whole Israeli conflict, even the Ukraine conflict, playing into support for either of these candidates?
Yeah, so I think that's a really interesting question. I know Trump came out and has said repeatedly that a top priority in his second term will be quickly negotiating an end to the war with Ukraine and Russia. He has said previously that he does not intend for the U.S. to pay any more there. He thinks that we've paid a significant amount, and it's not fair because he believes that the European nation should be paying more towards the cost of the conflict, which, you know, I definitely see a point there. And I think most Americans agree with that. As far as sitting with Israel, Trump has been such an ally to Israel. He's been very clear, very open about that. Yep. And I think it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out because there are so many opinions on both sides.
Hey, let me interject one other thing before I run out of time. Maggie's telling me we have less than a minute right now. Bobby Kennedy Jr., will he spoil the election? Will he tilt it one way or the other?
I know a lot of people are calling him a spoiler. I have not seen any evidence that says that he is even on the ballot in enough states to do that. So we will see what happens. I think he's got a little bit of steam behind him, but I think as time goes on and he gets more of a platform, it falls off. So we'll see what happens there.
Hey, thank you for what you do. Always good to talk with you, Logan. Great conversation. People can check you out at CatholicVote.org. They do a wonderful work. God bless you. Hey, Chaplain of Divine Mercy, straight ahead. Stay with me. We'll pray. Let's pray in a particular way today for our country.